The hatchet man led the way across Grant Street toward a throng of people on the opposite sidewalk. That crowd opened like magic before them, and they walked into an alley. Gloom closed in around them, as on the sidewalk, the crowd came back together as if there had never been a gap. Frank was confident none of those folks would ever admit to seeing anything unusual if the police questioned them. The grip of the Tongs on Chinatown was strong. Instinct warned him that by going with the hooded hombres, he might be waltzing right into a trap. But he didn't know of any reason why those powerful Chinese gangs would have any grudge against him. He had never clashed with the Tongs during any of his rare trips to San Francisco in the past. Except for the big hatchet man at his side and another who trailed behind them, the men who had launched the improbable raid on the Golden Gate had scattered. If they took off those hoods and hid their weapons under their jackets, they wouldn't look that different from all the other men in the Chinese Quarter. They could blend in and disappear in a matter of moments. The girl on Frank's shoulder began to stir. He stopped and let her slide down onto her feet. She was unsteady and pressed both hands against his broad chest to steady herself. As her wits returned to her, she lifted her head, stared wildly around her, and opened her mouth to scream.
That wouldn't be a good idea.
Frank put his hands on her shoulders, which the low-cut dress left bare.
You don't want to annoy these fellas.
He felt her trembling like a bird as he took his first good look at her. She was on the small side, only a couple of inches over 5 feet, and slender, although her body had the sort of mature curves that made the red silk dress look good on her. Thick, dark brown hair fell to her shoulders. Her gray eyes were wide with fear.
Your name's Connie, right?
Yes.
Well, listen to me, Connie. You're gonna be all right. I give you my word on that.
Frank gave the big hatchet man a hard look as he said that, so the hombre would know he meant it.
I don't know exactly what these fellas want with me, but their only interest in you is making sure you don't tell anybody they came into the Golden Gate to get me. Once they're through with me, they'll let you go. And they'll keep you safe the whole time, or else they'll have a lot of trouble on their hands. You understand?
He squeezed Connie's shoulders.
You're going to be all right.
She didn't look quite so terrified, although she was still plenty scared.
I won't cause any trouble. I'll do whatever you tell me.
Good.
Frank kept one hand on her shoulder as he turned to face the big hatchet man.
All right. You can go ahead and take us to your boss now.
The man said some swift words in Chinese to his companion, and they started off again. For a while, Frank tried to keep up with all the twists and turns they took through the maze of alleys and narrow streets, but finally gave it up as hopeless. He had no idea where they were or how to get back to the Barbary Coast. His frontiersman's instincts were all but useless here. Even though it was midday, the spaces between the buildings were so small and clogged with laundry hanging from lines strung across them that nothing got through except a dim, dusk-like half-light. Frank's nerves crawled. He was used to wide-open spaces and didn't like being closed in. At last, the big hatchet man opened a door and motioned for Frank and Connie to go up a dark, steep, narrow flight of stairs. Connie shrank back against Frank.
How about one of you go first so we know we're not walking into an ambush?
The man gestured toward the smaller hatchet man, who reached through the doorway and brought out a candle from somewhere. He lit it with a match he produced from a pocket in his quilted jacket, then started up the stairs in the lead with the candle held high. Its flickering glow revealed the stairs were covered with a dirty, threadbare carpet runner. The grimy walls seemed to close in on each side. Frank prodded Connie into going next. His guts were tight with the impulse to draw his gun as he followed her, but he left the Colt in its holster. Not only did he have the big hatchet man right behind him, but he also felt like eyes might be watching them through hidden portals. He didn't want to spook anybody. When they reached the top of the stairs, the man with the candle led them along a dingy hallway. From the looks of it, the building was abandoned, but Frank didn't fully believe that. The corridor made several turns. Then they came to another staircase leading down.
There we go. Where are they taking us?
I don't know, but I hope we'll be there soon.
They reached the landing, turned, and kept going down. Frank figured they were below street level. At the bottom of the stairs was a door, and when the man with the candle opened it, The light revealed a tunnel with earthen walls and thick beams shoring up the ceiling, like in a mine.
No, I can't go in there. They have earthquakes here sometimes. The tunnel could collapse. I can't go in there.
She turned with panic in her eyes and tried to run, but Frank caught her.
It won't take us long to get through it. We'll be all right.
He wished he could be as sure of that as he sounded. The big hatchet man motioned impatiently for them to go on. The tunnel was wide enough for Frank and Connie to walk side by side. He kept an arm around her waist to steady her as they followed the man with the candle. Even though Frank had no way of knowing how long the tunnel was, it turned out that what he had told Connie was right. They were in it for only 100 yards or so. Then came to another door with stairs behind it leading up. Obviously glad to be out of the tunnel, Connie climbed them without any prodding. They emerged into another hallway where the walls were covered with colorful, intricately embroidered tapestries. The hardwood floor was polished to a high sheen, ornate brass fixtures that held gas lamps. Frank figured they were in a completely different building. The tunnel they had used probably passed underneath one of Chinatown's streets. The hall ended up in a small square room with a fine rug on the floor, a couple of impressively ugly chairs that didn't look all that comfortable, and some small but exquisitely detailed paintings on the walls. A pair of doors on the opposite wall were closed. The big hatchet man, who had put away his blood-stained weapon, went to those doors and opened them.
Please, Mr. Morgan.
The girl stays with me.
The hatchet man inclined his hooded head in agreement. Frank led Connie into the room on the other side of the doors. It was as large and opulent as he expected it to be. This was where he would meet the boss, he sensed. The man who had sent those hatchet men into the Golden Gate to fetch him. Maybe now he would get some answers. There were no windows. The walls were covered with more tapestries. The room was furnished with a divan and several well-upholstered armchairs, but the large desk in its center dominated it. It was the sort of desk you'd find in the office of a successful banker or lawyer, like Claudius Turnbuckle, Frank realized. The man who stood behind it was dressed like an American businessman, in a sober gray suit, white shirt, and black cravat. He was young, probably around 30, and had sleek dark hair and a mustache. At first glance, you might not even take him for Chinese, although the golden skin and dark almond-shaped eyes testified to his heritage. He regarded Frank and Connie solemnly.
Mr. Morgan. Mr. Frank Morgan.
That's right.
The man's eyes cut toward the big hatchet man.
Ling Yuan, I did not tell you to bring any entertainment with you.
The man finally pulled the hood off, revealing a stolid face that bore the marks of many battles in the past.
She heard me speak Mr. Morgan's name, and I thought it best not to leave her behind to tell Lanigan of our interest in him.
Then you should have—
A 1,000 pardons, illustrious one. But Mr. Morgan insisted we bring her along.
Very well. You adapted to the situation and performed your task admirably, as always, Ling Yuan. Since we're going to be working closely with Mr. Morgan, cooperating with him in this matter should convince him of our good faith.
I'd be more convinced if you'd tell me what you know about my son.
Of course.
The man came out from behind the desk and extended his hand to Frank.
But first, introductions are in order. My name is Wong Dak.
He smiled for the first time since Frank had come into the room, and the light from the gas lamps winked on the tiny jewel embedded in one of his front teeth.
But you can call me Diamond Jack.
Frank took the man's hand and shook it.
You know who I am.
Indeed I do. Frank Morgan, sometimes known as the Drifter. You are a famous fighting man who hires out his gun.
Well, you're wrong about that.
Frank let go of Diamond Jack's hand.
I've been in plenty of fights, but never for money. Only for causes I believed in, or to protect folks who needed my help.
Then your reputation does not do you justice.
I stopped worrying about things like that a long time ago.
It takes a man with a great deal of serenity not to worry about what others think of him.
Just never seemed like it was worth the time and trouble to me.
Diamond Jack turned to the big man he had called Ling Yuan.
Escort the young lady to one of the other rooms, so Mr. Morgan and I can speak privately.
She stays with me. I promised her I'd take care of her.
Your concern is touching, but unnecessary. She works for my enemy. Things must be said that she cannot hear.
Do I have your word she won't be harmed?
Of course. I'll go farther than that. Ling Yuan, defend this woman to your last breath until I release you from the task.
The big hatchet man bowed to show his obedience.
Satisfied, Mr. Morgan?
I reckon I'll have to be.
Connie shook her head and backed away.
No, I don't trust these men.
They're men of honor. They'll keep their word.
I'll have tea brought to you. You'll soon see that I'm not the monster Dex Lanigan makes me out to be.
Ling Yuan escorted a pale, trembling Connie out of the room, leaving Frank and Diamond Jack alone. The younger man held out a hand to indicate Frank should take the comfortable red leather armchair in front of the desk. Frank took off his hat and sat down. Diamond Jack went behind the desk and settled himself in the big swivel chair.
I hope you'll forgive me for the somewhat unorthodox manner in which I arranged this meeting between us, Mr. Morgan.
I've got a hunch most things about you are a mite unorthodox, Mr. Wong.
Please, call me Diamond Jack, or just Jack. I suppose you've noticed that while I honor my ancestors, I don't dress or speak like them.
No way for me to know about the honoring part, but yeah, you don't exactly look like what I'd think of as a Tong leader.
You believe I lead one of the Tongs here in Chinatown?
Don't you?
Actually, yes. I am the leader of the Wu Sing Tong, and some of the leaders of the other Tongs look to me for advice and counsel, since we have banded together to deal with the threat of a common enemy.
Dex Lanigan.
Indeed. Lanigan has attempted on several occasions to expand his power and influence from the Barbary Coast into Chinatown. That is one more indication of how much things have changed. In previous decades, no white man, even the most arrogant and ambitious, would have dared to do such a thing. But a new century will soon be upon us. We face new challenges and must use new methods to combat them. I intend to run the Tongs as a business, a profitable business.
Of course, some of the old ways are still effective, like using hatchet men to chop your enemies into little pieces.
Well, some things never get old. Yes, our enemies still fear the hatchet men. They shall learn to fear even more.
What about my son? I don't see how he figures in this war of yours against Lanigan.
To be honest, I don't either. But clearly Conrad Browning is very important to Lanigan. Otherwise he wouldn't have attempted to have your son and the lawyer Turnbuckle killed as soon as Browning reached San Francisco. Lanigan knew he was coming and wanted to get rid of him.
I reckon you keep pretty close tabs on what Lanigan does. That made you curious about Conrad.
Indeed. My thinking was that if your son is so important to Lanigan, perhaps there is some way I could use him against my enemy.
You started watching Conrad, too.
Yes. San Francisco is a city of spies, Mr. Morgan. There are eyes and ears everywhere belonging to people who work for the various factions. The normal citizens go on about their business without any idea of the undercurrents actually guiding their lives. Some of my men, including Ling Yuan, whom you met earlier today, have been watching Conrad Browning for the past few days. In fact, he quite possibly saved his life several nights ago when Browning was involved in a fight at a tavern called Spanish Charlie's. The owner of the tavern, although your son probably didn't know this at the time, is Dex Lanigan. The situation ultimately led to the perilous circumstances in which Browning currently finds himself.
What perilous circumstances?
Last night, Lanigan set a trap for your son. My men did not become aware of it in time to prevent it. Browning was captured. The man with him, a bodyguard hired by Claudius Turnbuckle, was killed.
Where is Conrad now?
Being held prisoner on a ship called the Nimbus. It sails tonight, and Browning will be forced to become a member of the crew during its voyage to China and back. He's been shanghaied, as the Americans call it. Either that, or the captain of the Nimbus has orders to kill Browning and dump his body at sea. It's impossible to know which fate Lanigan has in mind for your son.
Why haven't you sent your men in to rescue him?
Oh, taking over a ship is a different proposition from intervening in a tavern brawl or making an incursion into Lanigan's saloon. I knew only a few bouncers would be working in the Golden Gate at this time of day. On board the Nimbus, there's an entire crew of extremely tough sailors. It's almost certain I would lose some of my men, and they're valuable to me. I refuse to run that risk, simply to frustrate Lanigan's plans and annoy him. I want to know what's going on here, Morgan. I want to know why your son is so important to Dex Lanigan. Perhaps then I can decide if he is that important to me.
So you brought me here to answer that question.
Who better to know the affairs of the son than the father?
How did you know I'm Conrad's father?
I have my sources of information. There are spies everywhere, remember?
Frank sensed he wasn't going to get a straight answer out of the man. Diamond Jack wanted to protect his sources. Frank couldn't blame him for that. The Wu Sing Tong was locked in a war with Lanigan, and its leader would use every weapon at his disposal.
What happens if I tell you what's going on?
Then I decide whether or not to rescue your son.
Based on how much of a blow that'll deal to Lanigan.
Precisely.
Frank nodded. The Tong leader represented his best chance of getting Conrad off that ship before it sailed, so he was going to have to put his cards on the table.
3 years ago, Lanigan made a deal with a woman named Pamela Tarleton. At least that's what Claudius Turnbuckle and I believe.
Turnbuckle has a reputation as an astute lawyer, but I have never heard of this Tarleton woman.
Consider yourself lucky. At one time, she was supposed to marry my son, but all she wound up ever giving him was grief.
For the next few minutes, Frank sketched in the details of Conrad's relationship with Pamela and how she had set out to have her vengeance on him. When he reached the part about the hidden children, Diamond Jack arched an eyebrow.
This woman sounds impressive.
If being downright evil impresses you, I reckon she fits the bill all right. Ever since Conrad found out about the twins, he's been looking for them, and the trail led him here to San Francisco. It looks like she made an arrangement with Lanigan since he's been trying to kill Conrad. I want to get my hands on him so I can make him tell me if he knows where my grandchildren are. Unless those spies of yours might be able to shed any light on that.
My people cannot look for something they don't even know exists. And this is the first I have heard about any missing children. You and your son have my sympathy, Mr. Morgan. You have suffered much at the hands of this Tarleton woman.
Conrad more than me. But I'd be holding a grudge against her, too, if she was still alive. I sure don't want her winning, even though she's dead.
Perhaps I can be of assistance.
You'll help get Conrad off that boat?
It can be arranged. But I must have something in return.
What do you want?
What happens to Lanigan if he knows where the children are hidden?
I reckon that's up to him.
I would like to see him wind up dead. My men might be able to get to him, but at a high cost. You and your son, on the other hand...
We're not members of your Tong, so our lives aren't worth as much to you.
Look at it however you will, Mr. Morgan. But it seems to me you and Browning have ample reason for wanting Dex Lanigan dead, as do I.
I told you I'm not a hired gun, but if you rescue Conrad from that ship, I think there's a good chance the two of us will be taking the fight to Lanigan. What happens after that is up to fate.
As a good Chinese, how can I not put my trust in fate? Very well. You have a deal. Before the Nimbus sails tonight, my men will take your son off the ship.
One more thing. I'm going along.
Knowing your reputation, Mr. Morgan, I expected no less.
At least a year had dragged by since he'd regained consciousness the second time, Conrad thought. That was what it felt like, anyway. But the ship on which he was being held prisoner still rocked gently at anchor, and since the captain had said they were sailing that night, Conrad knew only hours had passed, not months. The first time he woke up in that hellhole, he had only thought he hurt. The second time, he was in more pain. Not just his head, but his entire body ached intolerably. A lesser man would have wanted to curl up and die. Conrad lay there, regaining some of his strength, and trying to figure out a way to escape. The second part of that challenge was going to be difficult, if not impossible. The next time that door in the bulkhead opened, there would be at least 3 men on the other side of it, probably more. They wouldn't take chances with him again. It was possible they wouldn't unlock the door until after the ship had sailed. Realizing that was enough to goad him on his hands and knees again. He crawled around until he found one of the crates he had encountered earlier. Pulling himself onto it, he sat for a long time and rested from the effort. Feeling stronger, he got to his feet and began exploring his prison. There might be another way out, a porthole maybe. If he could find something like that and force it open, there weren't any portholes. He felt his way all over the 4 walls of the chamber and found nothing except the door. The hinges were on the inside, but he had nothing with which to work on them. If he had a tool of some sort, He might work the pins out of the hinges and free the door. With that thought in his mind, he stumbled through the darkness back to the crates and fell to his knees beside one of them. He ran his hands over the lid, searching for even the tiniest gap he might be able to force his fingers into. If he could pry one of the boards loose, he might be able to use a nail in it to push the pins up and out of the hinges. What he really needed was a crowbar to pry up a board. If he had a crowbar, he could use it to force the door open and wouldn't have to attack the hinges. He wasn't thinking straight. The beatings he had endured, plus the lack of food and water, had taken quite a toll on him. A desperate thirst gripped him. The inside of his mouth felt like sandpaper, and his tongue seemed twice its normal size.
Feeling sorry for yourself won't do you any good, Conrad. Get back to work.
Finally, on the fourth crate he checked, he found a slightly warped board on the edge of the lid. Gripping it with his fingers, he heaved up with all the strength he could muster, but the board didn't budge. He rested a few moments and tried again, then again, and again. He lost track of time. He didn't know if he'd been pulling on the board for 15 minutes or 3 hours. He didn't notice when the board finally shifted a little. He just reset his grip and heaved again. The movement was unmistakable. Conrad slumped against the crate as emotion washed over him. He was far from being free, but at least he'd accomplished something. After a moment, he shook his head in the utter darkness and got back to work. Suddenly, nails slipped a little in their holes. Conrad grinned savagely and heaved again. At last, a piece of it came free in his hands. Two nails were still in place, protruding about an inch and a half from the bottom side of the board. He climbed painfully to his feet. Having spent so much time in the dark, almost airless chamber, he was able to find the door much easier, guided to it by some instinct. Working by feel, he wedged the point of one of the nails firmly against the bottom of the pin in the uppermost hinge and tried to force it up. Putting pressure on the board, the pin slid some and stuck out about half an inch above the hinge. He tried to wiggle it out the rest of the way, but it wouldn't come loose. A couple of minutes later, the pin was in his hand. He clutched it in triumph.
Only two more to go.
The fog rolled in before the sun went down, cloaking the city in gloom. Once night fell, visibility shrank to almost zero. From an alley between two warehouses along the Embarcadero, Frank couldn't see the ships docked at the other end of the long wharf. The big hatchet man called Ling Yuan waited patiently next to him. Behind them were a dozen more of Diamond Jack's men. The Tong leader had remained in his stronghold. As he had explained to Frank, he was an executive. He gave orders to warriors. He didn't take up a hatchet himself. That was all right with Frank. From what he had seen of Ling Yuan and the other hatchet men, they could handle themselves just fine in a fight. He wouldn't have to worry about them, only about rescuing Conrad.
The ship is supposed to sail in less than an hour. Before then, three Wu Xing soldiers will swim around to the other side and use grappling hooks and cords to get on board. While they cause a distraction, the rest of us will go up the gangplank.
Do you have any idea where my son is being held?
Somewhere below decks. Wong Duck's agents have watched the ship all day. There's been no sign of Conrad Browning. But you and I will find him. The others will keep the crew busy while we search. We must be quick, so we can get away before the police come.
I figured your boss would have the police paid off to look the other way.
This is possible with some of the authorities, but an annoying number of them are honest.
You speak English really well.
A missionary lady from England taught me, while I was still in China, before I came to this country.
Is she still over there teaching?
No. A local warlord saw the missionary teachings as a challenge to his rule. He had warned the lady and the other missionaries to leave. When they didn't, his soldiers raped the woman and killed them. Then tortured all the men to death.
What did you do?
What could I do? I was only one man.
Ling Yuan looked off into the fog.
A month later, the warlord was found in his fortress, choking on his own entrails. The heads of all his guards had been cut off. He died moments later.
Frank looked at the big man and slowly nodded.
Somehow that doesn't surprise me.
Our men will be on board soon. Be ready.
Frank was ready, all right. He had slipped a sixth bullet into his Colt, into the chamber he usually kept empty so the hammer could rest on it. Ling Yuan had his arms crossed over his chest.
Since I came to this country, I have learned to read English. I have read stories about you, Mr. Morgan.
The dime novels?
Yes. Do they exaggerate your exploits?
By a whole heap.
But you are a gunfighter.
I never set out to be. But a fella pushed me until I didn't have any choice but to draw on him. He thought he was fast, but I was faster. After him, there was another man, and another, and almost before I knew what was happening, I had a reputation. I had to leave the place where I'd grown up, had to leave behind a girl. Since then, I've never settled for very long in any one place. Tried a few times, but something always happened to make me think it was better to move on.
The life of a true warrior. Trouble finds him wherever he goes.
Yeah, it's about the size.
Ling Yuan pulled his hatchet from under his jacket.
We go.
After Conrad finished with the other hinges, the door still sat squarely in its frame. The lock on the other side held it shut. Suddenly, an idea occurred to him. He felt his way over to the crate with the broken lid and stuck his hand through the small opening he had made. He pressed against the canvas to see if he could tell what was underneath it. He felt a long, narrow shape. It took a moment for Conrad to realize he was touching what felt like a rifle barrel. Excitement leaped through him. He grabbed the piece of board that had broken off and pried up the remaining section still nailed to the crate. With that bigger opening created, he pulled out handfuls of excelsior and threw it behind him until he had uncovered more of the cargo. Using the nails and the broken board, he poked a hole in the canvas, then ripped it larger. He plunged his hands into the grease coating the rifles in the crate. He pulled out one of the weapons. Of course, it was empty, and he had no ammunition. But even so, the feel of a gun in his hands made his heart leap. He set it on the crate, tore off a piece of canvas, and started wiping the grease off the rifle, as well as from his hands. He had to tear off more canvas, but eventually he had the rifle fairly clean. It felt like a Winchester repeater. Conrad wondered if all the crates in the hold contained rifles. He had a hunch they did, and he suspected there was something shady about shipping them to China. That wasn't any of his business, though. He just wished he had a box full of cartridges. That could make all the difference in the world. Maybe he could use the rifle to bluff his way past some of the sailors once he got out, he thought. They wouldn't have any way of knowing for sure the weapon was unloaded. His muscles suddenly stiffened, and his head came up as somewhere above him, gunshots sounded. A ruckus was going on, and he couldn't help but think it had something to do with him. Maybe Turnbuckle had figured out where he was and sent in the police. Or maybe that big Chinese hatchet man, his guardian angel from Spanish Charlie's, had shown up unexpectedly again. If that was the case, Conrad hoped the man had brought some friends with him. Not even the formidable Ling Yuan, that was what Carmen had called him, wasn't it? Would be a match for the entire crew of the ship. Hearing people coming, Conrad backed away from the door, holding the broken board in his right hand and using his left to pick up the Winchester.
Bring a light. Plant yourselves in front of that door. Nobody gets the brownie.
The sailors were going to stand guard out there. Realizing that wouldn't help him, Conrad focused on getting them to open the door. He lifted the rifle and slammed the butt of its stock against the panel.
What the hell?
Get your guns ready. Molly, unlock that door and get out of the way.
Conrad backed off again, having a pretty good idea what was about to happen. Once the door was unlocked, one of the men pushed the door, thinking it would swing open. The racket hadn't even had a chance to echo in the companionway when Conrad hurtled over the fallen door, slashing right and left with a piece of board in his hand. The protruding nails made it a vicious weapon. They tore across the neck of a startled sailor and he fell to the deck. The flat side of the board hit the second man's head, staggering him. Conrad dropped the board and used both hands on the Winchester. He rammed the barrel into a man's belly, then slashed the stock across the sailor's face when he bent over in pain. Conrad saw two men down and only one still on his feet, making him realize his vision had improved. The last man held a pistol and fired. Conrad felt the hot breath of the slug as he leaped forward and crashed the rifle butt in the middle of the man's face. The man slumped against the wall with blood pouring from his ruined nose and mouth and slid to the deck. The pistol slipped from his fingers. Conrad snatched it up and turned toward the exit. Ling Yuan motioned for Frank to fall behind as they charged toward the gangplank leading to the deck of the Nimbus. The other hatchet men would take the lead and run interference. Frank and Ling Yuan had the important job of finding Conrad. Once on board, the hatchet men scattered across the deck to meet the threat of the ship's crew. The hatchet men were blindingly quick and avoided most of the bullets as they rushed in.
The captain! He can tell us where your son is.
Ling Yuan waved his hatchet toward a short, burly man wearing a blue jacket and a cap. Frank headed for the captain with Ling Yuan at his side. The man saw them coming and dropped a gun from under his jacket. Before he could fire, Ling Yuan sent his hatchet spinning through the air, slicing cleanly through jacket and shirt sleeves. It lodged in the captain's right forearm. The man dropped the pistol and fell to his knees. Unexpectedly, the captain reached into a pocket with his left hand and brought out a derringer. The little weapon had two barrels, one on top of the other. At close range, it would be lethal. Frank quickly palmed out his Colt. The captain reeled backward as two slugs ripped into him. He struggled to raise the derringer again. The derringer slipped out of his fingers, and the captain fell to the deck. Frank turned his head to see who had fired the other shot, and was shocked to see Conrad with a smoking pistol in his hand, halfway through a hatch leading below decks.
Frank?
Frank hurried over to the hatch and extended his left hand to Conrad, who gripped it and let Frank help him out on deck. Conrad was battered and bruised and had dried blood on his face.
Are you all right?
No, I'm fine. I'm a lot better now.
How in the world...
No time for that. We should go.
He didn't wait to see if the other hatchet men got away. Ling Yuan hustled them toward the safety of the dark alleys along the Embarcadero. Ling Yuan led them through the maze.
I never expected to see you here, Frank. How did you...
Claudius and that friend of yours, Arturo, decided you needed a hand, whether you wanted one or not. Not sure you did, though. You'd already gotten loose somehow.
Yeah, but I might not have made it off that ship without your help. Thanks, Frank.
You can thank Diamond Jack, this big fella's boss. He's the one who decided to step in and get you away from whatever Lanigan has planned for you.
You know about Lanigan?
I know about all of it. About the kids, and what Pamela did, and Lanigan's part in it. I hope you'll let me play out the hand with you, now that I'm here.
Damn right I will. And unless I was locked up down in that hold longer than I thought I was, I know where Lanigan is tonight. I think it's time we go and introduce ourselves to him.
Ling Yuan insisted they accompany him back to Diamond Jack's stronghold in Chinatown. Since it was unlikely Conrad would have escaped without the Tong leader's help, he supposed he could take the time to do that. The ball at the Kimball Mansion would be going on for several hours yet.
What will happen back on the ship?
The police will arrive, yet again too late to do anything but clean up the mess left behind and blame the violence on the Tongs.
Well, you fellas did have something to do with it.
Because we were helping your son.
True enough.
If they search the ship, they'll find something interesting. There's several crates hidden down in the hold where I was locked up that I'm pretty sure are full of brand new Winchesters bound for China.
As a power in the criminal underworld, Lanigan has numerous connections with smugglers. No doubt those rifles were intended for one of the warlords who controls China. If I'd known about the guns, I might have burned the ship.
Conrad looked over at Frank.
Ling Yuan has some old grudges against the warlords. I'll tell you about it later.
The ship won't be sailing tonight. Not after everything that's happened. I'll talk to Claudius and he can make sure the authorities get tipped off about that cargo.
We need to let Claudius and Arturo know you're safe.
Long Duck can telephone Mr. Turnbuckle and inform him. We have some modern conveniences in Chinatown.
You don't call him Diamond Jack?
I prefer the more traditional customs.
Like hatchets.
Sometimes the old ways are still the best.
A short time later, Ling ushered them into Diamond Jack's sanctum. The slender, well-dressed Tong leader stood up to greet them.
I was already informed you had been rescued successfully from the Nimbus, Mr. Browning.
He held out his hand to Conrad.
Welcome to my home.
Conrad shook hands with him.
I understand I have you to thank for what happened tonight.
Don't think me too altruistic. If Dex Lanigan wants something, I want to deny it to him. Clearly, he wanted your death. Or at least your exile.
He's going to be mighty surprised in a little while when I walk into that party at the Kimball Mansion.
You're going to a society ball. Not looking like that, I hope.
I guess I could clean up a little.
Diamond Jack nodded to Ling Yuan. The big man nodded back and looked at Conrad.
Come with me.
Where?
By now you must trust us.
Conrad didn't. Not completely. And he was all too aware he was in the middle of another place where escape would be very difficult. But Ling Yuan had a point. So far, no one connected with the Tong had done anything except be helpful to Conrad.
What about you, Frank?
Your father will stay here with me while your needs are attended to. He can tell me more about the quest that brought you here.
I reckon it'll be all right. If Jack wanted us dead, his men could have seen to it before now.
That was true enough, Conrad supposed. He nodded to Ling Yuan. Ling Yuan took him to a room where a young woman in a red silk dress waited on a divan. At first glance, Conrad thought she was Chinese because she had dark hair and eyes. But then he took a closer look and saw that she was white. She was short and slender, but well curved. The skimpy dress she wore looked like something you'd find on a saloon girl.
Who are you? When am I going to get out of here?
I can't answer the second part of that, but my name is Conrad Browning.
You're Mr. Morgan's son, the one he was looking for.
You know Frank?
We met earlier today. It's because of him that I'm being held prisoner by these...
She glanced at Ling Yuan, obviously too scared to go on.
You have not been harmed, have you?
Well, no, but I want to get out of here.
At the moment, that is impossible. But no harm will come to you. You have Wong Duck's word on that, and mine as well. Wong Duck has suggested that while you are here, perhaps your time could be spent productively by tending to Mr. Browning's injuries.
What? I'm no nurse. I'm a... Well, it's pretty obvious what I am, isn't it?
Ling Yuan gestured toward a door at the side of the room.
Through that door is a place where you can get a basin of water, as you have no doubt already discovered. There are cloths in there as well. Please help Mr. Browning clean his injuries while I bring fresh garments for him to wear. You do not want to wear the garb of a hatchet man, my friend? Do not worry. As you have seen, Wong Duck prefers Western-style clothing to go with the Western name he has adopted. I will bring you something suitable.
With that, he inclined his head in what Conrad recognized as a gesture of farewell and left the room, closing the door firmly behind him.
You know who I am. What's your name?
Connie. You're really Conrad Browning?
That's right.
Well, I guess it won't hurt anything if I help out, like that big monster said.
Conrad wasn't sure he would describe Ling Yuan as a monster, but the man might look like that to her. She went into the other room and came back with a basin of water and several clean white cloths.
Sit down on the divan. I'll see if I can get that dried blood off your face. What'd they do, beat you?
Yes. Not Ling Yuan and his friends, though, if that's what you're thinking. They're the ones who rescued me.
She caught her bottom lip between her teeth for a second as she sat down next to him and dipped a cloth in the water.
Our names are sort of alike, aren't they? Conrad and Connie.
I noticed that.
She started dabbing at the blood on his face.
My real name is Constance, but I like Connie better. Some of the girls who work at the Golden Gate don't use their real names. They make up something instead. But I never saw any point in trying to pretend I'm somebody I'm not, did you?
I can understand why somebody would feel that way. Maybe they want to forget the lives they left behind.
Maybe they're just ashamed to admit they work in a saloon. If anybody doesn't like who I am or what I do, they can just go... Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hurt you.
It's all right. It just stings a little.
Wish we had some whiskey. I'd use it to clean all these scrapes and scratches. Of course, that would sting even more.
So you work at the Golden Gate?
That's right. I was there earlier today when your father came in, then a bunch of those Chinamen busted in and all hell broke loose. I got knocked down in the rush to get away from the trouble, and I probably would have been trampled if it hadn't been for Mr. Morgan. He grabbed me and got me to safety. Of course, then the Chinaman grabbed him and took him out of there, and they brought me along, too. But it could have been worse. I think the big one they call Ling Wan wanted to kill me right then and there.
Probably not.
You've got blood on that shirt, too. And Ling Wan said he was bringing you some clean clothes. Why don't you go ahead and take it off? You may have some other wounds and need attention.
I'm sure I'll be fine.
There's no reason for you to be shy, Mr. Brandon. Not like I'd see anything I hadn't seen before. In fact, you could take all your clothes off and I wouldn't see anything I hadn't seen before.
It's not that. I just don't think it's necessary.
Maybe not. But we don't have to have a good reason for everything we do in this life, do we?
The door opened, and Ling Yuan came back in, carrying an expensive black suit.
Appropriate to wear to a party such as the one you will attend this evening, according to Wong Duck.
He held out the clothes to Conrad, who took them and agreed with the assessment. Ling Yuan turned to Connie.
You will come with me.
What are you going to do with me?
You will be taken to Wong Duck's home and will continue to be his guest there.
I thought this was his house.
This is his place of business.
I don't want to go. I want to stay with Mr. Browning.
You can't do that. I have places to go.
And I won't fit in there, will I?
It's not that. It might be dangerous for you. Lanigan will be there, and if he sees you with Frank and me, he'd likely think you betrayed him. You wouldn't want that, would you?
All right. If you think it'll be safe for me to go with this Wrong Duck.
That's Wong Duck.
I think the lady knows that.
Conrad took Connie's hand.
Thank you for helping me. Maybe I'll see you again later on.
I hope so.
Ling Yuan ushered her out of the room. Conrad stripped off his filthy clothes and put on the clean white shirt, the black trousers, the vest, and the black coat. He tied the silk cravat he found in the breast pocket of the jacket and fastened it down with an ivory-headed stick pin. Ling Yuan came back and handed him a small revolver that Conrad recognized as the Smith & Wesson 38 he had bought a couple of days earlier.
I found it on the docks last night where Lanigan's men captured you. You must have lost it during the struggle.
Conrad checked the loads in the gun, then slipped it into his waistband where the suit coat would conceal it.
Much obliged. I'd lost track of it. All I knew was that I didn't have it anymore.
Conrad ignored the dull headache he still had as Ling Yuan took him back to Diamond Jack's office. Stopping just inside the door, Conrad gave a surprised grunt when he saw his father wearing a suit every bit as elegant and expensive as the one he wore.
Never thought I'd see you decked out like that, Frank.
Never thought anybody would ever catch me in one of these monkey suits either. But Jack pointed out we might not get into that mansion where the party's going on if we showed up looking like we did. It's bad enough that face of yours looks like you've gone 15 rounds with Gentleman Jim Corbett.
Did you ever see Corbett fight?
Shoot, I was even the referee at one bout. Well, that's a long story, and we don't have time for it right now.
That's right. We need to get to Madison Kimball's house. There's no way of knowing for sure how long Lanigan will be there.
I have a carriage waiting for you. Don't worry, the driver is white, so he won't look out of place. I have a few of your people working for me for situations such as this. Money, I've found, has no color other than green.
We appreciate all your help.
Remember, should Dex Lanigan not survive this night, I would feel the spirits of my ancestors smiling upon me.
I can't guarantee that, but if Lanigan doesn't tell me what I want to know, there's a good chance those ancestors of yours will be grinning before the night is over.
The big house on Knob Hill, one of many in the exclusive neighborhood, was lit up brilliantly. Dozens of carriages and buggies, gleaming with expensive brasswork, sat parked in the curving driveway running in front of the porticoed entranceway. Conrad had been to many places like that. He'd been a fixture at the lush, lavish parties given by his mother, and also at the parties thrown by her millionaire friends. Looking at the Kimball mansion as he and Frank swung down from the carriage Diamond Jack had provided, Conrad was struck by the thought that normally he would have preferred to be in the high country somewhere, watching an eagle wheel through the blue sky, or out in the lonely vastness of the desert where a man could truly find peace. That realization brought home to him exactly how much he had changed over the past few years. But the man who might be able to tell him where to find his missing children was inside the mansion, so at that precise moment in time, there was nowhere else he would rather be. Frank tugged at his cravat.
I don't see how some fellas wear these daggum things all the time. Feels like somebody's about to slip a black hood over my head and drop me through a trapdoor in a gallows floor.
It's not that bad. And stop pulling at it. We're supposed to look like we belong here, remember?
Frank stopped fidgeting with his cravat and patted the slight bulge under the jacket at his waist. That prompted Conrad to touch the .38 tucked away in his waistband, even though he could feel the weight of the gun. They walked to the door, where a man in butler's livery stopped them.
I need to see your invitation, sir.
I'm afraid I don't have it with me, but if you have a list of invited guests, I'll be on it. Conrad Browning.
And how might I be certain you are indeed who you say you are, sir?
Why don't you check with Mr. or Mrs. Kimball? Both of them are personally acquainted with me.
I'm sorry, sir, but I couldn't think of disturbing them while they're occupied with their guests.
Conrad, there you are. I was beginning to think you weren't going to make it.
He looked past the butler and saw Francis Carlyle coming toward him. The newspaper columnist was quite attractive in a dark green gown that set off her eyes. Conrad wasn't surprised to see her there. Despite having a job, Mrs. Carlyle was still a member of the society circles about which she wrote for the Chronicle. Of course, the Kimballs had invited her so they could get a favorable write-up in the paper.
Hello, Francis.
The butler turned to her.
Do you know this man, Mrs. Carlyle?
Of course I do. He's Conrad Browning. Now get out of the way and let him and his friend in.
The servant rolled his eyes, but he moved aside. Conrad and Frank walked into a foyer with a beautiful parquet floor. Mrs. Carlyle looked at Frank.
Who's this?
This is Frank Morgan, an old friend of mine.
Not that old.
Mrs. Carlyle took Frank's hand.
Morgan. There's something familiar about that name. You're not related to J.P. Morgan, are you?
Not that I know of.
Oh, well, it'll come to me.
She moved between Conrad and Frank and linked arms with both.
Come with me. I'll show you around. You've been here before, of course, Conrad, but it's been a while.
Yes, it has.
They moved into a huge fancy ballroom filled with men in sober suits and women in glittering gowns.
You remember that I'm here to see Dex Lanigan?
Of course. I'm taking you to him. By the way, what happened to your face? You look like you got caught in a threshing machine.
It's a long story, and I'll make sure you and Jessup Nash get all the details later.
If you decide to leave Nash out of it, I won't argue with you.
Before Conrad could respond to that, Mrs. Carlyle stopped and nodded her head.
Over there, under that big painting of Madison and Roberta, that's Lanigan and his wife, Winifred.
Conrad tried not to be too obvious about staring at him. The man was tall and rather raw-boned, with an angular face and white hair that was somewhat premature for his age, which Conrad put around 40. The woman standing next to him, smiling radiantly in a light blue gown, was about 10 years younger, with a pile of lustrous black curls on her head and a richly curved body that filled out her gown nicely. She was pretty rather than beautiful and had a sweet look about her face. She didn't strike Conrad as the sort who would be married to a powerful criminal, but he supposed there was no particular type for doing such a thing. Lanigan was talking to several well-dressed men while his wife stood by smiling pleasantly. Conrad kept drawing his eyes back to her for some reason.
Lanigan's wife's name is Winifred, you said?
That's right.
Was he already married to her when he bought the Golden Gate and started working his way into San Francisco society?
Why, I don't really know. I might be able to find out for you.
If you could do that, I'd appreciate it.
Why don't you and Mr. Morgan wait over there for a few minutes?
Mrs. Carlyle pointed to a small alcove.
I'm assuming you don't want to talk to Lanigan just yet?
That's right.
On the way from the crowded ballroom, Conrad snagged a couple of glasses of champagne from a passing waiter who carried a tray full of them. Frank took the delicately stemmed glass Conrad handed him and frowned.
I never cared much for this fizzy water.
Just sip it. We'll look more out of place if we're not drinking. And you already look odd enough, what with my battered face and your obvious hatred of that suit and cravat.
Already Conrad had spotted quite a few people who looked familiar to him, even though he didn't remember their names. So he avoided conversation by stepping into the alcove. He didn't want word spreading that Conrad Browning was in attendance. That news might make its way to Lanigan's ear, and Conrad didn't want to ruin the surprise fate held in store for the saloon owner. While Frank sipped his champagne, Conrad used the glass to help shield the bruises and scrapes on his face from view. He looked around for Frances Carlyle, but the woman had disappeared into the crowd.
Conrad? Conrad Browning, is that you?
Conrad had no choice but to look over and smile at Roberta Kimball, the hostess of the night's affair. She was an elegantly beautiful middle-aged woman with honey-colored hair only lightly touched with gray.
Dear Lord, what happened to you?
Just some unpleasant business that has no bearing on this party.
Conrad leaned closer and kissed Mrs. Kimball on the cheek.
It's wonderful to see you again.
And you too, of course. When Frances Carlyle told me you were in town, I knew I had to have you here so all your old friends could see you again. Oh, Conrad, I'm so sorry.
I know. I appreciate that, Roberta.
After the tragedy, you shouldn't have come back here. We would have taken care of you.
I thought it best to keep busy.
I don't believe I'm acquainted with this gentleman.
Roberta turned to Frank.
Allow me to introduce an old friend of mine, Frank Morgan. I hope it's all right I brought him along this evening. Frank, this is Mrs. Kimball, our hostess.
I'm mighty pleased to meet you, ma'am.
Of course it's all right, Conrad. Mr. Morgan, please make yourself at home.
Yes, ma'am. Much obliged.
She frowned slightly, as if his manner puzzled her. But before she could say anything else, Frances Carlyle reappeared.
Roberta, you simply must go set Madison straight. He insists it was 2 years ago you made that voyage to Hawaii instead of three.
I swear, poor Madison is getting so forgetful. Excuse me, Conrad. Mr. Morgan, please enjoy the party.
We will.
I found out what you wanted to know, Conrad. Lanigan and his wife were married shortly after he bought the Golden Gate. She's a widow from somewhere back east.
She doesn't hardly look old enough to be a widow.
Widowhood can happen any time. In her case, she didn't just get a husband, she got a new father for her children.
Children?
That's right, she has two. They were babies at the time, actually, so it must not have been very long since her husband passed away.
Two children?
That's right, a boy and a girl. Someone told me they're twins.
Frank's hand closed around Conrad's arm to steady him.
You all right, son?
Son?
Conrad had never been the sort who would pass out at unexpected news, but for a second, the ballroom had spun crazily around him. No, not just the ballroom, he thought. The whole world had tilted off its axis and was turning the wrong way. His children had spent the past 3 years living with a vicious criminal. Conrad had thought all along Pamela had hidden the twins, but she hadn't. She had merely disguised them as the children of that woman Winifred, that supposed widow from back east. Conrad had no doubt she was actually the nurse who had accompanied Pamela and the twins from Boston. She had been paid off to marry Lanigan and pretend to be the children's mother. Everything was shockingly clear.
My God. Conrad, you look like you've seen a ghost. What's going on here? What's so special about the Lanigan twins?
They've taken his name?
That's right. I think he legally adopted them.
Conrad forced himself to steady his nerves.
Thank you, Mrs. Carlyle. You've been a big help to me.
Oh, no, you don't get off that easily. I want answers, Conrad, and I want them now.
Sorry.
Conrad pulled his arm loose from Frank's grip and started across the room toward Lanigan. Frank maneuvered through the crowd after Conrad. Spooked by the look on Conrad's face, people stepped out of his way, opening a lane across the big room that led straight to Dex Lanigan. He saw Lanigan look up and recognize him. Stunned surprise settled over the man's face. It didn't last long. Lanigan hadn't risen to power by being easily startled. His expression hardened as he put a hand on his wife's shoulder and moved her behind him so he stood between her and Conrad. Conrad had to give the man credit for trying to protect the woman he was married to, even though she was a lying, mercenary bitch. All eyes in the room were on them when Conrad stopped about 4 feet from Lanigan.
You know why I'm here.
I do. I don't even know who you are, friend, let alone what you want. You look like you've been through the ringer, though. How about a drink?
I want my children.
I don't know what you're talking about, mister.
My children. The twins. Frank and Vivian. Pamela Tarleton stole them from me and gave them to you.
Lanigan tried to remain calm and suave, but the man's control was developing cracks. Conrad was barely able to keep his own emotions in check.
It's true that my wife and I are the proud parents of twins, but they're not yours. And they're not named Frank and Vivian. Their names are David and Rachel.
And you're their father?
Well, actually, no. My wife's first husband, her late husband, fathered them. But I love them and feel like they're mine, so I've adopted them. They are mine.
It was all Conrad could do not to pull the Smith & Wesson and put a .38 slug between the man's eyes. Forcing himself to stay calm, he shook his head.
They're not yours, and they're not hers. I'm their father, and Pamela Tarleton was their mother.
No!
Winifred Lanigan stepped around her husband.
Stop that! Stop saying that! David and Rachel are mine! Don't you think I know whether or not I gave birth to my own children?
You were paid to lie. Pamela set this all up. She gave Lanigan the money to buy the Golden Gate Saloon, and she paid you to marry him and pretend the children were yours. But we all know that's not true. You stole my son and my daughter from me, and I'll have them back.
So much for subtlety. So much for trying to get Lanigan alone and forcing him to talk. Everything had blown up right out in the open. Conrad hadn't intended to go that way. But when he found out Lanigan and Winifred were passing the twins off as their own, the emotions running unchecked through him were too strong to resist. They had overwhelmed him, and he let himself be carried along on the wave. Winifred turned to her husband and buried her face against his chest.
Make him stop saying those awful things, Dex. Make him stop.
Don't worry, dear. I'll handle this.
Dex Lanigan looked at Conrad.
I'm still not sure who you are, mister, but I think you'd better leave. Otherwise, I'll be forced to summon the authorities.
Go ahead and call them. Call the police, and I'll tell them all about how you tried to have me killed, and when that didn't work, your men shanghaied me onto a ship bound for China with a shipment of rifles you're smuggling to the warlords. So go ahead, Lanigan, summon the authorities.
A hand plucked tentatively at Conrad's sleeve. He looked into the pale face of Roberta Kimball.
Please, Conrad, I can tell how upset you are, but is it really necessary to do this here?
I'm sorry. I didn't set out to ruin your party. I really didn't. But when I heard how these two liars had stolen my children...
That's enough.
Lanigan tightened an arm around his wife's shoulders.
We're leaving.
Conrad reached under his coat and drew the .38.
No, you're not. Not until we've settled this.
Conrad, look up!
Of course Lanigan wouldn't have come without guards, Conrad thought as panic erupted. Everybody scattered, except the men wearing the red jackets of waiters who charged across the ballroom with guns in their hands. Lanigan's men working the party so they would be on hand in case of trouble. Lanigan grabbed Winifred and shoved her behind him again, then lunged at Conrad and grabbed the wrist of his gun hand, twisting it so that the Smith and Wesson pointed at the fancy chandeliers dangling from the ceiling. Conrad tried to wrench his arm free, but Lanigan hung on stubbornly with both hands. Conrad smashed a punch with his left hand into Lanigan's body. A few feet away, Frank had whirled around to meet the threat from the saloon owner's hired guns and keep them away from Conrad. His Colt was in his hand, but there were too many innocent people in the way. Frank held his fire. Suddenly, a gap appeared in the crowd, and two of Lanigan's men took aim with their pistols at Frank when they spotted him holding a gun. Seeing that he wouldn't hit any innocent people, Frank lifted his Colt. Both men collapsed to the floor. The exchange of shots made the panic in the ballroom worse as everybody headed for the doors. Seeing more men bring out their guns, Frank overturned a table and knelt behind it for cover. Conrad hooked another punch into Lanigan's body, causing him to loosen his grip. Conrad tore his gun hand free and slashed the .38 across Lanigan's face, opening a gash in the saloon owner's forehead and causing him to take a stumbling step backward. Winifred picked up a chair and smashed it down over Conrad's head as he turned toward her. Using one of the broken chair legs she still clutched in her hand, Winifred hit him again. The blow landed solidly against Conrad's skull, just above his left ear. Skyrockets exploded in his head, and the room started spinning. As he staggered to the side, Lanigan tackled him, and they crashed to the floor. Conrad lost his grip on the .38. It went sliding away across the brilliantly polished hardwood. As Conrad struggled to regain his wits, Lanigan pummeled him viciously.
Won't you just die!
Conrad got a hand up and chopped at Lanigan's face. Using his other hand, he grabbed Lanigan's collar and hauled him to the side. He swung another punch, burying his fist in Lanigan's midsection. The weight that suddenly landed on Conrad's back drove him forward. Winifred wrapped her arms around his neck.
I got him!
Not for long.
Conrad surged to his feet and slung her away from him. She slid across the floor just like the Smith and Wesson had a few moments earlier. As she slid, one of the stray bullets creased her arm. She rolled onto her side and clutched it.
Winifred! Hold your fire! Hold your fire!
As Conrad scrambled to get his gun, Lanigan lashed out with a kick. It sent him flying backward, leaving him too stunned to move after he landed. Lanigan scooped up his wounded wife into his arms.
Cover us! We're getting out of here!
The gunman leaped up and formed a line to shield Lanigan as he dashed toward the door with Winifred in his arms. Frank crouched lower behind the bullet-pocked table and held his fire. He didn't try to bring Lanigan down. There was too great a chance of hitting the woman. Conrad rolled over onto his stomach, pushed himself up a little, and shook his head groggily in an attempt to clear away some of the cobwebs clogging his vision. As his eyesight cleared, he saw Lanigan disappear through the front door with Winifred. The gunmen retreated as well, shooting as they went to keep Frank pinned down. Seeing the coast was clear, Frank hurried over to Conrad and helped him to his feet.
Are you all right?
Yeah, just shaken up a little. And mighty tired of getting hit on the head and kicked in the gut.
Conrad clutched Frank's arm.
Lanigan got away. Now that he knows I know about the twins, he'll probably head for his house and try to ford up there.
Either that, or take his wife and the kids and get out of town while he still has some of his bought and paid law dogs take care of you.
If he tries to have me arrested and locked up as a dangerous lunatic, after tonight the police will probably believe him.
I reckon after everything you've gone through, nobody could blame you for acting a mite loco.
Yes, they will. This is San Francisco, not Dodge City. You can't just bust into a society party and start waving guns around. Frank, we have to get out of here.
If we can catch up to Lanigan and get our hands on those kids, maybe we can get to the bottom of this. Come on.
They started toward a rear door, figuring it would be safer to go out that way. Before they reached it, Frances Carlyle stepped out from where she had taken cover.
Conrad!
Mrs. Carlyle, are you all right?
I'm fine. That's what this was all about? Lanigan's children?
My children.
Can you prove it?
Give me enough time and I can. Or rather, Claudius Turnbuckle can.
I believe that. What a great story. And it's all mine because Jessup Nash isn't here. What are you going to do now?
Get my kids back. Settle with Lanigan.
You better hurry then, because the police will be here any minute.
Thanks for your help.
No need to thank me. Once I write this story, they'll forget all about Nellie Bly.